Thank you. Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. Please continue to hold. The conference will begin shortly. Please continue to hold. Thank you. Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. Please continue to hold. The conference will begin shortly. Please continue to hold while others join. Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. Please continue to hold. The conference will begin shortly. We're waiting for parties to join. Thank you. Excuse me, this is for those just joining. Please continue to hold. The conference will begin shortly. Please continue to hold. Thank you. Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star 1 on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If anyone has an objection, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn today's meeting to Barbara Reynolds. You may begin.
Thank you, Rebecca. This is Barbara Reynolds. I'm the Director of Public Affairs at CDC. Welcome to our telebriefing on the ongoing outbreak of Ebola virus in West Africa. Our presenter today is CDC Director Dr. Tom Frieden, and he'll have remarks, and then we will take questions from the media.
Hi, this is Dr. Frieden. Let me first start with the big picture, and then I'll go through considerable detail about what's happening with the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, because it is complex, and then be happy to take your questions and end with some final remarks. The bottom line is that Ebola is worsening in West Africa. CDC, along with others, are surging to begin to turn the tide. It's not going to be quick, it's not going to be easy, but we know what to do. In addition, as we always do, we are taking steps to make sure that Americans are safe here. So we work with hospitals and other groups to make sure that if there is a traveler with Ebola in the U.S., we would be able to contain that. First, by way of background, Ebola virus disease is very frightening. It is, frankly, a dreadful and merciless virus, and the current outbreak is bad. It's the biggest, most complex, and it's the first time it's been present in this region of the world, which means that response systems and community understanding of the disease is not what it is elsewhere. It's been deadly, and far too many lives have already been lost. The outbreaks are occurring across many geographic areas of three countries which share a common border. That common border appears to be if not the epicenter of the outbreaks. There are two major challenges which the countries are facing in control of Ebola. The first is that many of the health systems in these countries are not highly functional. They may not reach into rural areas, healthcare workers may not reliably be present at facilities, and facilities may have very limited capacities. Second, in some areas, as has been well covered by the media, there has been lack of understanding and hostility or violence against some of the groups that are trying to respond to the outbreaks. The key priority and the key means of stopping Ebola fundamentally is by doing three things. First, finding patients so that we rapidly identify patients, get them isolated, find out who their contacts are, keep them from spreading it to others, get them diagnosed accurately and promptly. Second, responding to cases, providing supportive care and treatment centers, and preventing spread and protecting healthcare workers. Finding every single contact of each Ebola patient and following each of the contacts for 21 days, each day checking to see if they have fever. If they develop fever, then they should go to an area where they can be kept apart from other people, tested for Ebola, and if positive, isolated, and that whole cycle of identifying their contacts starts again. And third, after finding and responding, preventing future cases, and that through messages to the community and health centers, avoiding close contact with sick people or bodies, reporting suspected cases, isolating cases in treatment centers to prevent spread, and for the prevention of initial spread from animals to humans, avoiding consumption of bush meat and contact with bats. CDC is surging our response with the current challenges that we're facing, and over the next 30 days, we plan to send an additional 50 CDC disease control specialists into the three countries. These individuals will help countries establish emergency operations centers that can develop a structured and effective way of addressing the outbreak. This is being done in close collaboration with the World Health Organization. They will also help strengthen laboratory networks so testing for the disease can be done rapidly and patients determined whether or not they have Ebola, and if they do, that whole chain of contact investigation continuing. And third, building the capacity of individuals from within the area to do these functions for this outbreak and future threats as well. Currently, we have staff in the region helping to track the epidemic using real-time data to improve real-time response. For example, identifying where the epicenter is, where secondary spread is occurring, understanding some of the spread events, improving case finding, contact tracing, infection control, health communication, and coordinating with WHO and ministries of health. We also are strengthening country capacity to reduce the travel of people who may have been exposed to Ebola out of the country. So this is something which each of the countries in the region has committed to doing. It's not easy to do, but we will have experts from our division that does airport screening assist these countries to screen and try to ensure that people who shouldn't be traveling aren't traveling. We also provide information to travelers to the region and to healthcare providers in the U.S. who may be caring for people returning for the region. That includes medical consultation and testing for patients who may have suspected Ebola. We also are today issuing a travel advisory recommending against non-essential travel to the West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. This is because the ongoing Ebola outbreak in these countries poses a potential risk to travelers, particularly if you're traveling to the area and you happen to fall ill or be injured in a car crash and needed to go to a medical facility which might have recognized or unrecognized spread of Ebola. It also supports these three countries in their abilities to preserve and improve their response to the outbreaks. It allows them to focus on control to protect the travelers who do go, because we are continuing, as we are at CDC, to surge our response and send additional disease control experts to the region. And humanitarian assistance continues to go in. We've had conversations with the air carriers, and we understand that they will continue to fly, which is very important to be able to continue to support the response and maintain essential functions in the country. The objectives of our surge are really to improve the ability of the countries to manage the current outbreaks. And over the next 30 days, we'll be deploying 50 Epidemic Intelligence Service officers, other epidemiologists, laboratory specialists, health communication experts to the affected area. In addition, we recognize that there will be concerns in the U.S. Ebola poses little risk to the U.S. general population, and it's important to understand how it spreads. Two things that are, I hesitate to say reassuring, because there's very little that's reassuring about Ebola, but frankly, reassuring about the risk of Ebola here is, first, it does not spread from people who aren't sick with it. So if someone's been exposed but they're not sick and someone else has contact with that individual, they are not at risk of getting Ebola. Ebola is spread as people get sicker and sicker. They have fever, and they may develop severe symptoms. Those symptoms and the body fluids that may be shed during that time, those are the infectious risk entities. And in Africa, burial rites, where people who have very large quantities of virus and have died from Ebola, can be a major way of spread of the disease. But in this country, we're confident that we will not have significant spread of Ebola, even if we were to have a patient with Ebola here. We work actively to educate American healthcare workers on how to isolate patients and how they can protect themselves against infection. In fact, any advanced hospital in the U.S., any hospital with an intensive care unit, has the capacity to isolate patients. There's nothing particularly special about the isolation of an Ebola patient other than it's really important to do it right. So ensuring that there is meticulous care of patients with suspected or if we have confirmed Ebola is what's critically important. On Monday of this week, we sent out a health alert notice to remind U.S. healthcare workers of the importance of taking steps to prevent spread of the virus. In past outbreaks, we've been able to stop every outbreak, but it takes meticulous work. It's like fighting a forest fire. If you leave behind even one burning ember, one case undetected, it could reignite the epidemic. So difficult as it is, it can be done, and I'm confident that as we make progress over the coming weeks and months, we will not only begin to tamp down these outbreaks, but leave behind stronger systems that will be able to find, stop before they spread, and prevent more effectively Ebola and other health threats. This is because countries will have emergency management systems. They will have laboratory networks, and they will have trained disease detectives and public health experts. So we're working in this surge both to begin to get better control in these three countries and to strengthen the capacity of these countries to improve their ability to find, stop, and prevent future outbreaks. So, bottom line, Ebola has been worsening in West Africa. CDC and others are surging our response to begin to turn the tide. It's not going to be quick. It's not going to be easy. Even in a best-case scenario, it could take 3 to 6 months or more. And given the weak healthcare systems and the violence that some areas have seen, we are not in the best of circumstances. And we have strong measures in place to protect Americans if there is the possibility of somebody coming in with Ebola. So I'll stop here and we'll turn it over for questions.
Thank you. We'll begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question now, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. I'll introduce you by name. To withdraw your request, you can press star 2. I'll take our first question. One moment. Comes from Joel Achenbach with the Washington Post. You may ask your question.
Yeah, thank you so much. Can you tell us what you're instructing healthcare officials, hospitals, and so on, airlines here in the U.S. to do to be on the lookout potentially for patients who might be showing signs of having the sickness of having symptoms of Ebola, if they were to show up with that?
The key issue for healthcare providers is if someone comes in with fever or other serious illness and they have had travel within the past 3 weeks to any of these three countries, to think that it could be Ebola, to get a detailed history, to contact the local health department, to contact us, to isolate the patient, and then we will work with them to arrange rapid testing to see if the patient has Ebola and do appropriate follow-up. The number of travelers from these three countries to the U.S. is relatively small, but nevertheless, we want to ensure that healthcare providers are aware and on the alert. At the same time, we're working on the other side of the equation in each of the three countries to strengthen exit screening so the likelihood of someone leaving who's been exposed is lower.
Okay, but how do you communicate this to people? Have you sent direct emails to different organizations? Are you also tracking people who have traveled from these three countries to the U.S.?
We have something called the Health Alert Network. It goes out to a very wide range of physicians, other clinicians, healthcare organizations. We also work with and through state and local healthcare organizations. We sent a health alert message Monday of this week, and we will continue to provide updated information. We do not track individual travelers. We think the most effective way to address this is, first, to work on control in the three countries. Second, to strengthen these three countries' ability to reduce the likelihood that exposed people will leave the country. And third, by strengthening the overall systems by which health organizations in this country would think of the possibility, in the case of someone coming from the region, do the appropriate isolation and testing and follow-up. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Caleb Helaman with CNN.
Hi. Thank you for taking the question. Actually, two quick ones. One is about the travel alert and generally that warning. You know, what kind of impact do you think that'll make? I mean, is it how much do you think that will help? And also, just there's been a lot of talk about the notion of evacuating some of the patients in West Africa. What might a patient get in a hospital in an advanced country like the United States that they may not be currently getting in West Africa, given that the treatment is really very supportive?
So there are really two different questions there. The travel alert basically is to avoid non-essential travel, and this is a way of reducing the number of people potentially exposed from the U.S. to Ebola, and also improving the ability of the countries to focus on getting their outbreaks under control without dealing with a large number of people coming in who are non-essential. It does not relate to the multinational effort to assist the countries in controlling the outbreak. And in fact, as I mentioned, we're scaling up our response activities by sending more staff to the countries. In terms of the care of patients who have Ebola, this is something that really has to be individualized. There's a risk-benefit. As you note, we do not have effective treatment or vaccine for Ebola. There is no proven treatment, there is no proven vaccine, and there is not likely to be one for at least a year, even in the best-case scenario. So we're not going to treat or vaccinate our way out of these outbreaks. We're going to use the traditional means that work of case identification, isolation, contact tracing, health communication, good meticulous management. That is what has stopped every Ebola outbreak that's ever happened before, and that is what will stop this Ebola outbreak, but it's going to be challenging given the factors that I mentioned. So when it comes to the question of whether someone with Ebola should leave the country, that's a very complicated question which the organization that has hired and placed the person there has to deal with. There is the potential that the actual movement of the patient could do more harm than the benefit from more advanced supportive care outside of the country. But there are, as you know, organizations with staff who are ill in country, and we would certainly work with them to facilitate whatever option they wish to pursue.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Maggie Fox with NBC News.
Thanks very much. Dr. Frieden, I think there's a lot of Americans who have this idea that there are teams of CDC experts at all the airports with their, biocontrol suits that will rush out to the airplane and grab anybody coming off with a fever from West Africa. Can you paint a better picture of what it's like and kind of describe how voluntary this system really is?
I'm sorry, I missed the last phrase that you said, how infectious it is?
How voluntary the system is. It requires, a lot of cooperation on the part of the people traveling, correct?
So, again, the key here is to stop Ebola at the source in the three countries, to reduce the likelihood that patients with exposure, high-risk exposure, will travel outside of the country. We have at CDC quarantine stations in all of the major ports of entry. If a patient is ill on a plane, we are called to assess, and if appropriate, we would undertake tracking or tracing of the people around that individual on the plane. In fact, for the individual who traveled to Nigeria, our staff in Nigeria are assisting authorities in several countries tracing passengers who shared a flight with that individual. But remember that Ebola to spread generally requires close contact. It's not spread by the airborne route, and it's not spread from someone who's not sick. So we're talking about the risk of people who are quite ill, perhaps ill enough not to be able to hide the fact that they're ill, and to people with whom they have very close contact with body fluids.
Thanks. And can I ask also, is this an opportunity for CDC to switch around some funding so that you can devote people, money, and other assets to Ebola in West Africa?
We are looking at how we can meet the needs. It is challenging. There is not much flexibility in our budget. In fact, for the FY15 budget starting October 1, we had a substantial request in this area to fund global health security work such as response to Ebola. We work with partners throughout the U.S. government to try to identify additional resources, but it is challenging given the tight financial times that we're in.
Okay, thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Rebecca Hammond with the Voice of Nigeria.
My name is Rebecca from Voice of Nigeria. You just said the transmission of Ebola is through close contact, but it seems it's going beyond that. The name itself was derived from a river. Do you mean it's not waterborne or airborne? Because my people are scared at the rate of which it is being transmitted and moving very fast. So we'd like to know how Ebola is contracted.
Thank you. We understand how frightening Ebola is. It's a dreadful disease, and it seems mysterious to people when it's spreading. It is very clear that it is not a foodborne illness. It is not a waterborne illness. And though there may be circumstances that it might have been spread through the air in situations like intubation of a patient putting a breathing tube in them, that's never been proven. And the overwhelming risk, the overwhelming way it spreads, is by close contact with infected and very sick people. So if we look at the cases that are occurring in the three countries, a large proportion of them are in people who were exposed in healthcare facilities. So that includes healthcare workers, who account for a substantial proportion of the cases, and sadly, a substantial proportion of the deaths as well. That also includes burial traditions, where there may be handling of the remains of someone who died from Ebola. It's very, very clear that that is an extremely risky thing to do. And so the communication is so important to get out into the communities that burial needs to be done in a way that is safe so that other people don't become ill and die from Ebola. And for every facility caring for people in that area, there needs to be meticulous infection control to protect not just the healthcare workers, but also patients' families, other patients. Hospitals become amplification points if there isn't meticulous infection control. We know how Ebola spreads. We know how to stop the spread of Ebola. But we need to make progress informing communities and implementing good control measures. I'll give you a positive example. In Uganda, where we've worked for many years with the government, Ebola is more familiar. We've worked with traditional healers so that they will recognize a potential Ebola patient and refer them to a diagnostic and treatment center. We've worked with the hospital so they isolate patients. We've ensured that where there are Ebola or possible Ebola cases, the burial practices are safe. As a result, where there used to be large outbreaks, now there have been sometimes just single cases where the spread stops or much smaller outbreaks. So we know that not only is it possible biologically to control Ebola with our current tools, but it's also possible in Africa, working with community strengths and community leaders, to do that as well.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Michael Shear with New York Times.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. Starting this weekend and into the early part of next week, something like 50 airplanes from Africa, including some of these countries, are going to be landing in Washington for this summit. And I guess I'm wondering whether the CDC is taking any special precautions to protect the president and the president's team and everybody else that's here in Washington, given the fact that these, some of these planes might be coming outside of the normal sort of travel network and travel procedures that that commercial flights might come on.
We're certainly looking at all options for ensuring that travelers from this region in particular are accorded all possible health care if they become sick and don't expose others to illness if they do become sick. Remember, this is limited to three countries, and the key is to identify people as soon as they develop fever if they have contact with Ebola cases. We've also strongly encouraged anyone who's had contact not to travel. So we're looking in a multi-agency way on various options to ensure that if there is someone who becomes ill, both they are appropriately cared for and their risk of exposing others is minimized.
Are you guys recommending to any of these, the three countries, that they not attend the summit?
No, but we do understand that some of the heads of state are so focused on controlling these outbreaks that they may or may not come.
And do you know in those cases whether they're still sending teams of people, or is, or the affected countries or the heads of state have chosen not to come, whether they're not, none of the people from their country are coming at all?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mike Stobe with Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. Dr. Fried, a little earlier you said that, speaking about the three countries, that the number of travelers from these countries is relatively small. How small? Can you tell us what the number is, you know, in an average week or month or year? And also, I wanted to know the decision to change the travel advisory to a level 3 warning. What was there a particular occurrence or piece of information that made you decide to elevate that since Monday when you said the level 2 was staying in place?
The thing that makes us go to level 3 is some unstable infrastructure and a risk to travelers which would either be increasing or unable to be determined. And what has concerned us is the possibility that healthcare facilities in the region in particular may be places where if you had an emergency totally unrelated to Ebola, you needed your appendix out, or you had a fall and broke an arm or leg, or had a car crash, that if you went to one of those facilities, we would be concerned that, first off, that facility might be deeply stressed because of the Ebola's challenge, and second, that there might be some risk of you being exposed to Ebola. And for that reason, we've recommended that travelers avoid non-essential travel. In terms of the numbers, from the data that we can get, it's a very, very tiny proportion of all travelers entering the U.S., on the order of perhaps 10,000 in a normal 3 or 4 month period. So the numbers are small. They go to not directly from these three countries because there are very few direct flights. So there's indirect travel, and they go to various places of the U.S. And this is some of the reason why the most effective practical way is, again, first, work to control the outbreak in the three countries. Second, strengthen exit screening in the three countries. Third, improve our ability or ensure that we have the ability in this country, if there is someone who comes in, to rapidly isolate them, test them, and take appropriate action. And I have no doubt that we have ample capacity in this country. If we did have patients coming in, we have lots of isolation rooms in every major hospital in the country. We have health departments that would be able to do fever checks for 21 days on people who may have been exposed. So for our own situation, where we're able to get good information out, we're able to explain how Ebola spreads, we have isolation capacity, we have health departments, it's not a potential of Ebola spreading widely in the U.S. That is not in the cards.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Betsy McKay with Wall Street Journal. Your line's open.
Hi, I had a couple of questions. earlier, Dr. Frieden, we were talking about funding, and I just wondered, you know, all the efforts that you're undertaking now and will be undertaking, you know, how much is this all costing? How big a piece of this $100 million WHO response plan is this, and who funds this? Is this all U.S. government money, or do the countries themselves contribute any part, or are they not in a position? And then I wanted to ask you separately, given the state of the emergency there, do you envision CDC staff themselves providing direct medical care if needed?
So that was about three questions as far as I could follow. First, in terms of the countries themselves, they're absolutely committed, and we do expect them to step up, and they are stepping up. Tragically, they've experienced the loss of many of their health leaders and doctors who have worked in this outbreak. So they're key for providing everything from care to management to security. And one of the main things that we're doing is trying to strengthen their systems so that they'll be able to respond to these outbreaks and to future outbreaks. In terms of funding, you mentioned the World Health Organization, which has just today released a new joint $100 million response plan for intensified outbreak control. CDC has some money from its own resources and some money from other parts of the U.S. government. We basically are doing what it takes to get people there. The situation is fairly fluid in the field in terms of the ability to work safely. We already had one team that was confronted by an angry group of people and had to retreat across borders to a different country. So we can only work where we can work safely and securely. In terms of the direct health care, although we have done this in the past, we think this is best done by groups like MSF, which has an excellent record of providing very high-quality care, and our role might be to help and support and coordinate with them.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Amy Birnbaum with CBS News. Your line is open. Amy, your line is open. CBS News.
Okay, Rebecca, next question, please.
Next question comes from Elizabeth Cohen with CNS.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. Thanks for having this press conference. I was wondering if you could tell us what you know about the two Samaritan's Purse volunteers coming back to the U.S., if that's going to happen, and also about the experimental serum that one of them has received.
So, as I said earlier, it's really up to the organization what they do. There are a lot of complexities, and we stand willing to help them in their decision and to support them in that. In terms of experimental treatment, I don't know any details of what may have been given. I will say that we've reviewed the evidence of the treatments out there and don't find any treatment that's had proven effectiveness against Ebola disease?
One of the volunteers received serum from a 14-year-old boy who had recovered. Is that useless? Is it perhaps even dangerous? What do you think?
Without seeing the information, I really can't comment. This was something that was done in the past for infectious diseases, but there are so many things we don't know about why someone may recover and which antibodies may be protective and which may actually be harmful. Very difficult to know how to comment on that.
Thank you. We have time for one more question.
Our question comes from Denise Gray with New York Times. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. The travel advisory, does this have any particular meaning for Americans who are working in the affected countries? I'm thinking about embassy staff or other people who may be working. I mean, does this mean, will this have some effect of closing embassies or having those people go home? And then I just would like to add one other thing, and that is you mentioned some capacity at airports here for passengers coming in if people are sick. Have you stepped up that airport capacity at all because of this outbreak, or is it just what it has always been? Thanks.
Thank you. It's really a Department of State decision in terms of each embassy. One of the factors they take into consideration are the travel advisories, and they have various levels that they can refer to both their own staff and the Americans in country. We are emphasizing that we're not telling people who are essential to leave, because we do want to support the countries in their ability to control the disease. In terms of quarantine stations, we are staffed around the clock and have the ability to surge as needed in the U.S. Thanks very much. And before we close, I'd just like to reiterate three key points. The first is that Ebola is worsening in West Africa. This is a tragic, painful, dreadful, merciless virus. And it's the largest, most complex outbreak that we know of in history. Second, we at CDC are surging our response along with others. And though it will not be quick and it will not be easy, we do know how to stop Ebola. And meticulous work with case finding, isolation, contact tracing will stop the chains of transmission from continuing. But that kind of meticulous work to avoid the forest fire ember type problem is important. This is a marathon, not a sprint. This is going to take at least 3 to 6 months, even if everything goes well, and we have challenges with security and healthcare systems that make it not the best conditions. And third, we have strong systems to find people if there is anyone with Ebola in the U.S., ample systems to isolate them and provide the follow-up if that were to occur. So I want to thank you all for your interest. We'll be happy to provide additional information as we learn more and as more occurs.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. This concludes our telebriefing. If media have questions that we would like to, we are able to address those through the CDC press office at 404-639-3286, and a transcript of this telebriefing will be available online. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thank you all for attending today's conference. You may now disconnect.